My name is Dr. Marcella Thompson. I'm the state agencies and community liaison for Brown University's Superfund research program. Part of our facilities are also dealing with lead as a toxic legacy in our neighborhood of Little Rhode Island. And certainly for most of us on the East Coast in particular, we've had a long history with lead. We have four speakers, or actually three. The fourth did not, she is ill, so she's not going to be presenting. So what we thought we would do is I will do the introductions, and then each of our speakers has 20 minutes. And then what we're going to do is have our three speakers present, and then they can come up here and answer questions, and you can have some dialogue since it is such a small group. So our first presenter is Dr. Stephen Whitaker. He is a public health researcher and toxicologist with the public health system for Seattle and King County. Prior to joining this county in 2008, Stephen worked for 12 years in the Occupational Health and Safety Research Program, where he ran the adult blood lead surveillance system. An occupational health person after my own heart. Steve has a PhD from the University College of London and conducted postdoctoral research at UC Berkeley and the University of Washington. He is also adjunct faculty appointment at the University of Washington. Dr. Whitaker. And all we have to do is just move forward this.
Perfect. Thanks very much. I'm really happy to be here. This is my first APHA. And I really welcome the opportunity to describe the situation that emerged in King County, Washington in September of 2012. And in talking with colleagues around the country, we think that this is one of the largest outbreaks of lead poisoning that we've seen in recent history, and certainly one of the largest outbreaks that has been seen in an indoor firing range. And I just want to acknowledge that this was truly a multi-agency effort. It involved our Washington State Department of Ecology, our State Department of Health, our State Department of Labor and Industries, the Agency for Toxic Substances Disease Registry. It involved our NIOSH, the NIOSH-funded ABLES Adult Blood Lead Surveillance Program, and last but not least, our local city of Bellevue. And I have nothing to disclose, other than frustration as you'll hear about the lack of ability of local health jurisdictions to take action to protect members of the public from lead exposure. So briefly, I'm going to talk a bit about how and why we see lead in firing ranges. I'll describe the incident that I just mentioned, and I'll touch on lead's health effects with particular reference to putting blood lead levels in perspective, and especially as they pertain to exposures and health effects in vulnerable populations. And then I'll talk, as I just alluded to, about some of the challenges we faced as a local health jurisdiction in dealing with this issue, and maybe just think about how we might move forward to remedy the situation so we don't find ourselves in the same predicament again. The bottom line is that there can be an awful lot of lead in bullets. And as many of you know, the projectile itself is generally made of elemental lead. And while the range in this particular incident only allowed the use of jacketed ammunition, which would mean there would be a layer of something like cupronickel or steel around the lead itself. What happens is, well, when these bullets hit the backstop on the range, they fragment and become destroyed on impact, so that lead still becomes available. And the second source of lead is primer. There are all sorts of lead salts that are used to actually ignite the gunpowder once that end piece is struck by a hammer. And so On the gun range, there are a variety of ways that lead vapor and particles can be released. So, as I mentioned, the primer ignites and then can release lead vapor. As that projectile travels down the barrel of the gun, it releases very fine particles that can then be ejected. And then, as I said, as the projectile hits the backstop, it deforms and fragments and can create very fine lead particles as well. And I just want to mention that there are several designs available for these backstops, and they range from basically just a pile of sand to rubberized materials to like steel materials. Basically, they're all designed to do one thing, and that's to hopefully stop the bullet from traveling any further, because if it goes further, you're in trouble. And also, you don't want it to ricochet and bounce around. So the fundamental design, no matter what the material is to stop that bullet. And in the lower right-hand picture, there's a very unhappy officer there, because that is the one thing you never want to do. You will never want to be downrange by a backstop without the use of personal protective equipment, because in the occupational health world, what we generally see as the most frequent cause of lead exposure in workers is lack of appropriate PPE when you're working around all these fine lead particles that have been distributed all around that backstop. And I just want to mention that this lead dust can obviously contaminate other areas on the range, including building components like exposed girders, fiberglass ammunition, and all sorts of other surfaces that are accessible to that lead. So this is sort of kind of a typical layout of a shooting range, and it's important to realize that the primary engineering control that protects the workers from lead exposure is a really well-functioning ventilation system. And typically what's supposed to happen is that air will progress down the range at the shooter's backs, moving lead vapor and particles downrange. So this is where the shooter would be. And theoretically speaking, and this is a big theoretical, there's a nice linear flow of, there's an industrial hygienist in the audience, there's a nice linear flow of air down the range, obviously going then past the targets and then out of the exhaust system. And again, in the ideal world, there's a HEPA filter sitting there that will capture the lead before the exhaust air is sent to the outside. So we'll just move to this particular incident now. So the first program to become aware of any lead exposure at this range was our NIOSH-funded adult blood lead surveillance system. And they received two blood lead reports for employees at the range. And one blood lead level was 40 micrograms per deciliter, and the second was 48 micrograms per deciliter. And so, as is typical with the surveillance system, they interviewed these staff, these employees, and they learned that the business owner was planning to add a second floor to his gun range, and he was going to install a state-of-the-art ventilation system throughout the facility so that he could expand his operation to include a facility for law enforcement. So he started off with really great intentions. He wanted to expand his business and add a state-of-the-art system to accommodate law enforcement, but unfortunately the devil was in the details, because the first thing he did was to have his employees knock out the back wall and use a bobcat bulldozer to shift 650 tons of lead contaminated sand into the parking lot. That's what that picture is here. And then the employees were instructed to actually become lead miners and sift through the sand to recover the spent lead fragments so the owner could recoup the cost of the disposal of the sand by recycling the lead. And the employees reported that there was a layer of lead-contaminated dust then throughout the whole facility because of all this fine particulate that was disturbed. And they were also told to go in at night. These are range employees still, not construction workers, range employees. They were told to go in at night and remove the fiberglass insulation that was in the old part of the range. Well, when wipe sampling was done on that insulation, you can imagine what I'm going to say. The levels were in the hundreds of thousands of micrograms per square foot. There was just a huge amount of lead that had deposited in that area. So because this was looking like a situation that the limited resources available to the lead registry, they really couldn't handle this. They made a referral to our Washington State OSHA program because this particular employer had a history of lead violations. And by the time the registry staff realized what was going on, there were multiple construction workers on site. They could just not keep up with all the industrial hygiene evaluation that needed to take place. And so OSHA opened their inspection in mid-November. And after they opened their inspection, they did the typical industrial hygiene sampling and found, as you might expect, very high levels of lead on surfaces and in the breathing zones of workers. And most crucially, the ventilation system wasn't working. They'd installed a temporary ventilation system because they're in the process of dismantling the system. And the industrial hygienist noticed all these things like turbulent flow and so on and so forth that was basically doing no good whatsoever in terms of protecting people at the shooting line. So I don't really have time to get into a lot of the details around the OSHA inspection, but the bottom line is that the blood lead levels for about 20 gun range employees and 26 contractors were at 10 micrograms per deciliter or greater. And again, without belaboring the point, what happens is as you increase blood lead level, the severity of health outcomes increases as well. And the highest blood lead level that was seen was actually in a carpenter who had a blood lead level of 159 micrograms per deciliter and actually had the sorts of symptoms for lead poisoning that we really haven't seen for decades. So I haven't mentioned my agency yet because I'm the local health jurisdiction. So far we've been talking about the state OSHA program and the lead registry. Well, we became involved when I received a phone call late on a Friday afternoon from the Washington OSHA Industrial Hygiene Manager, and this was November 30th, 2012. And the hygienist was concerned that the range was staying open to the public while this construction was happening at night. And she was concerned that lead dust was being disturbed during this construction, and that this temporary ventilation system wasn't really doing its job. And while she had enough data to show from an occupational standpoint that there were high air lead levels, they weren't high enough for her to really declare an imminent threat to workers, but she was concerned that there were people using the range when all this lead dust had been entrained. And she was hoping that as the local health jurisdiction, we could actually close the range to prevent exposure to customers until the construction was complete. And so she expressed particular concern that the following night was ladies' night. And I didn't know anything about this phenomenon, and the last one is my absolute favorite. It turns out that across the country, these ladies' nights are incredibly popular. And you can, if you Google ladies' nights, you'll find these stories in the New York Times, NPR, about gun ranges being the new bowling alleys and so on and so forth. It was an absolute wake up call for me. And although we didn't have any evidence of this happening at this gun range, it also turns out that across the country, many gun ranges are sponsoring kids' events. So now we have at least two vulnerable populations to be concerned about. We have women of childbearing age and potentially pregnant women using this range, and the potential for children to use this range as well. I know, I've learned so much about gun culture. It's absolutely mind-blowing. So what did we do? By the beginning of next week, we recognize that what's probably happening here is an emerging public health issue. And we mobilized what we call a surge response, which is, those of you in public health may know, which meant mobilizing a telephone bank. And the idea was to interview every worker and family member of workers that were associated with this particular situation. We actually went out there and collected some wipe samples after visiting the range. And then we ensured that signage was put up to ensure that the public were aware of the possibility of lead exposure. And then we also coordinated with the adult blood lead registry. And as I said, we interviewed about 100 workers. And we found very high surface levels in the thousands of micrograms per square foot of lead. Multiple surfaces were contaminated, high air lead levels. The vehicles of the workers were contaminated with lead, including their homes and hotel rooms where they were staying. And we found elevated blood leads in the children of one worker and their spouse. And so the biggest challenge here was that we never ever got to close the range. We couldn't do it. And you may know that health officers generally have pretty broad statutory authority to protect public health, but in this particular situation, there was no code, no regulations, there was no precedent or standard that our health officer could point to actually initiate something as severe as closing the facility. And it turns out, after doing some research, that as a public health agency, we could not identify a standard that we could administer to protect public health from lead in the air. And again, we're public health researchers. We're not industrial hygienists. So another huge challenge is, how do you quantify the levels of exposure? We would have to contract with an industrial hygiene company to have this work done, and it's a very expensive proposition. There is no permitting that we could find that stipulates lead exposure controls for members of the shooting public. And besides which, gun ranges are really hazardous. And as a public health person going into a gun range, you're concerned about the lead exposure. The noise is absolutely deafening. And there are all these very small pieces of lead flying around at very high speed that can be very disconcerting. And, we were very nervous about actually going into this facility and doing any intervention. We just didn't feel like we were prepared. So looking forward, I think there are some things that we could do. As many of you know, the state of California has just developed some permissible exposure limits based on biokinetic modeling. And it might be that we can do something similar, where we can take do some modeling to back calculate what are the concentrations of lead on surfaces and in breathing zones that would ensure a blood lead level of 5 micrograms per deciliter, for example. So this is something that we're thinking of doing with the Agency for Toxic Substances Disease Registry. We also know that, generally speaking, the public is not aware of these lead hazards in ranges. And I'm just going to skip really briefly through these slides, because none of this is rocket science. You know, there are very simple personal hygiene steps you can take to control your personal lead exposures. And industrial hygienists have known for years how to control lead exposures on ranges. So perhaps, you know, we could collaborate with our industrial hygiene colleagues to actually improve the situation, at least in King County, if not in Washington State. And so, you know, in conclusion, I think public health does have a role to play in educating both operators and shooters about the hazards associated with lead. We could help mandate permitting requirements that include the need for adequate lead exposure controls to protect workers and the public. And last and not least, and I think this is really crucial, is that our lead registries need a stable source of funding. I mean, many of you know the difficulties that the adult blood lead registry programs are having right now. We would not likely have been aware of this situation if it wasn't for those initial reports coming in from the adult blood lead registry. So that's something I think we really need to address. I'm just going to finish up by acknowledging the huge cast of characters that were involved in this. And my biggest oversight is that my boss isn't on this slide, because Angazi Aleru, who's our Environmental Health Division, was supposed to co-present with me, and I forgot to put her on here. So remember Angazi. And with that, thank you very much. Thank you.